life in the land of the ice and snow. My name is Heather, and I'm here today with my co-host, Kimberly. Hello, Kimberly.
Hi, Heather.
And our guest today is Alexandria, and we get a two-for-one here because you represent Indonesia and Canada.
Yes.
Yeah. So welcome. Why don't you fill everybody in on what that means?
So I grew up in Indonesia until I was about 17 or so before I moved to Canada for university. And I had been living in Canada for about 15 years in Vancouver, specifically on the West Coast. So it's all very warm compared to the rest of Canada. And I just moved to Stockholm about 3 months ago.
3 months ago.
Wow.
Okay.
She's a newbie.
Yeah.
Tre månader sen. That's about how much I can say in Swedish right now.
Oh, not bad. Not bad.
Impressive.
So what brought you to Sweden, to Stockholm?
My husband used to live in Sweden 15 years ago. He lived here for about 7 to 8 years. He's originally from Australia, but I always joke that he's more Swedish than he is Australian because I also heard that Swedes like to bring other people back to their country. So I think this is the situation that I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. My husband said that he has missed Sweden very much and would you like to try to live in Europe? And I say, why not? So
yeah.
It's going to be one big adventure. I think I tried to prepare myself before I come here of the cultural differences, you know, what can I expect to be different? So I'm excited. I'm a little nervous to resettle in a new country since it's been a long time since I had to do that.
So when you're preparing yourself for cultural differences, how do you do that? Were you looking things up, talking to people?
I was looking things up. I bought the book Lagom. So I read up a little bit on the concept. It's funny. It was actually, I think about 10 years ago before I met my husband that I picked up that book because I was in search of what is a work-life balance concept? I think it's, we talked about that a lot, but I think as someone who was younger at the time, I didn't really know what it means, and I was curious to learn more about it, and this book has been recommended to me. So the book talked about the concept of just enough, and I really like that idea of living where you're not living in excess, you're not living in deficit, you're living just enough.
Yeah, I like that. I had a friend talk about how Sweden and Scandinavian countries are often on the list of happiest countries in the world. And he put it as, I think it's listed as the happiest countries because people are satisfied. They're satisfied with their lives and they're not looking for the bigger truck or the bigger house or, you know, making a ton of money. They're like, we're pretty lucky to have what we have. We're good.
I think a lot of that is probably also due to the social safety net.
Right.
I mean, where you don't have the stress or the anxiety about losing your job if you get sick, you know, or if, for instance, you go on maternity or paternity leave, you still have a good amount of salary. So, yeah. I mean, those things add to a lot of quality of life and not being stressed, where maybe in other countries, those are things that you kind of worry about. And here in Sweden, I think that you don't really have that aspect of it. And also too, a lot of things here regarding sustainability and that sort of stuff. So people try to like not to consume so much or have so much. So yes, they might be quite trendy and have like the latest bag or shoes, but then they'll turn around and like sell those so then they can buy the next latest bag or shoes. So it's kind of like to not, you know, not having too much. So it translates like into stuff as well as life.
I think so. And yeah, you might have the trendy clothes, but you're riding your bike to the office sometimes to not, of course, we live in Stockholm,
yeah.
So you wouldn't want to take your car in the city anyway.
Well, I think that's another part of the aspects of life here that I think contributes to that satisfaction in life is that I say that Stockholm is a really human-focused city. And I know that sounds really odd, but I think it's the kind of things where you have to experience yourself, where it is really human-oriented. Spaces are made for the size of humans, not cars. They're not large. They're small and cozy. Pedestrians' lane are separated. Bike lanes are separated. You feel safe as a human walking around. And I think that's been a really big difference that I noticed from here to Canada is that the aggressive drivers here are non-existent. I mean, I think that I'm sure that there are bad drivers everywhere, but here, when I'm about to cross the sidewalk, to cross the street as a pedestrian, I would look at the car, I will wait for them because usually in Canada, they would just go speed up, even though they see that you're about to cross. Mm. Here, just this morning, there's a really nice car that passed by, and I kept looking at the car, and the car slowed down. And I say, oh, I guess it's my turn.
No, yeah. Pedestrians have the right of way. I mean, in all instances.
They do in Canada technically too, just no one really pays really attention to it. Yeah.
Like here sometimes I'm like, I'm not in a rush. So I feel like coming from the States, it's like, even when, you know I have the right of way, it's like, well, I don't want to rush across the street because there's a car waiting to pass. So sometimes I wave them on and then they wave me and I'm waving them and then they wave me and then I'm like, just go already.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, they don't know, like, well, you're supposed to go because you're a pedestrian. And then I'm like, yeah. So it's very funny sometimes because I'm just like, I don't want to race. I feel like I have to race across the street,
which I
don't, but... So I'm just like, just go, because I'm walking leisurely. I don't want to rush.
But I think it's a bit of a feedback loop, right? I think if the majority of people have a lot of experience being a pedestrian or a cyclist, and you know how it's like to be on the other side, you know, and you don't want to treat, you know, a cyclist with the aggressive driving that you have. Mm-hmm. So I think, I feel like there's something there. I mean, I think in Vancouver, if you say you're cycling, usually I would think, oh, wow, you're really, really into cycling, because it takes a lot to be on the road. Like, it's to be really close to cars and to feel like you can still navigate your way.
If you're cycling in Houston, you're a communist.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're walking. It's very wrong with you. No, because my husband, he would do that because, I mean, living in the medical center just there, it's easy to just kind of like walk, which walking is still a little bit like suspect, but in the beginning would like ride his bike and people would yell and scream at him, like, commie, you know, whatever. And he could not understand, like,
how dare you not,
why he was
not
being harassed.
Gas and oil
from riding a bike.
But that's the thing though, I feel like it's a joy in life that not a lot of people have the experience to try. I mean, certainly in Indonesia there's not really anywhere where you would do that. You would cycle as a sport. You don't cycle as a mode of transportation.
No, that's the same thing in Texas, I think. Yeah, because he basically stopped biking because he was getting, people really seriously tried to hit him because they were like, get out of the way, you know,
because
there
because
aren't
it's
any
not
bike,
a good
lanes.
Bike lane. Yeah. I think they've tried a few times and maybe in some areas of Houston they've gotten some bike lanes, but it's not much. And it's usually a protest. Don't mess with our streets to put in bike lanes for those hippies, you know.
Yeah. They didn't even want a monorail or that.
Oh, yeah. It's not the best city for transportation.
No. So it's like here biking is... walking and biking. I mean, I like that about the city.
Yeah,
and also,
me too,
honking your horn. Nobody rarely honks their horn here. It's that drove me crazy when my husband would drive in Houston because he wouldn't honk his horn because they don't honk horns here. I'd just be like, I'd be on the horn like,
I mean, they can, but they tell you when you take your driver's license, they're like, do not do that unless it's an absolute need to do it. Because also I think it's a very tight city like this. It's very echoey on everything. But I think, like you said, the drivers are very good here, and it's because they're extremely strict. It's hard to pass the driving test. And if you mess up in the first 2 years, you can get your license taken away.
Yeah.
So I think it makes for some very safe drivers.
Agreed.
I mean, it's not perfect, but it's a lot better than other places.
My husband shared the driving license test experience with me. So he has a Swedish driving license. So I guess you can conclude that he's decent enough of a driver that you can pass the test.
Yeah.
So he told me about the different maneuvers that you have to try, like, you know, being on the ice or slipping or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are, again, like really valuable lessons where, yes, hopefully you'll never get into an accident. But if you do, you do know how it feels to be slamming your brake when you're going really fast, or how it feels to be slipping. So I'm in favor of stricter driving tests because it makes for a lot of a better driver.
I mean, honestly, it's kind of fun when you have to do that test on the wet track and then you get to practice all of that kind of stuff. It's
exactly.
Super valuable. And I think people hate having to go to driving classes and all of this, but I think everyone looks forward to that part of it.
Before I've never taken the Swedish driving test. I'm kind of in a protest. this. I'm just like, no.
Well, you're in the, you live kind of in the middle of the city, so you don't need it that much unless you're going out to a country place or something like that. So
my husband usually drives me everywhere. Yeah. I take an Uber or something. I'm like, I have a license in the United States. I can drive there.
Yeah.
And I'm just, yeah.
It'll be your turn over there. And then.
Yeah. I drive in the States and he drives here.
Fair enough. That's fair. Compared to Houston traffic, I think that is fair enough.
Yes.
I mean, I'm really glad that I did have to do my test in Canada, because in Indonesia, your license, you just get it and you pay someone. And at least when I was growing up, yeah, we turned 17, which is the legal age. If you want to drive when you're younger, you can do that too. Money can buy you anything. So that's why I'm quite happy that I had to go for the system in Canada. That was my proper, like, okay, I know how to drive safely here. So Sweden just sounds like it takes it even to another level of safety.
Oh, yeah. So yes. How's the traffic situation in Indonesia?
Oh, not good. I mean, the only time I recommend you come to Jakarta is during the Ramadan season, because no one is in the city. If you visit there during that week, you might get the wrong idea about Jakarta's daily life. But I didn't grow up in Jakarta. I grew up in a small town called Lampung, which is in Sumatra Island on the west side of the country. So it's fairly close to the capital city, about half an hour flight. But I didn't grow up in the, call it the hustle and bustle of the capital city, which I'm really glad of, because of the traffic and the constant flooding they always got.
Am I wrong in that Indonesia has a lot of beautiful beaches?
If you know where to look for, yes. I think if you're a city kid, I don't think you've ever seen beach ever in your life. So go to Bali, go to the coastal towns. But I think that not everybody who lives in the city can say that they've seen the mountains or they've seen the beach.
Okay. So it's quite different depending on where you go.
It really is. I mean, I think something that I have been reflecting about is that, so this is the second country that I've moved to, I guess, as an adult. So growing up in Indonesia, moving to Canada, and now in Sweden. Every move, I think, makes me understand the culture that I come from better. And that's been highly rewarding for me in seeing the differences and also the similarities across culture, because every culture will share something in some aspects or the other. But I think you don't really know what it is when you are in the middle of it until you take yourself out of that. Right. And you say, wow, I am more Canadian than I thought I was.
I was going to ask you that. What do you feel? If you feel more Indonesian, more Canadian, a mix of both? I mean, where do you find yourself when you're here in Sweden that you identify?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I don't know if I have the full answer yet, but I certainly feel my Canadianness show up here in a sense that I say thank you a lot and I say sorry a lot. It's just in
very
my nature.
Very
stereotypical, but I didn't realize I was doing that so much until I came here, because every second word I would say, tuck and flood, because I think that's just the right way to say. And I bump into people and I would look at them with a really apologetic face and say, flood. And they just look at me.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I guess it's not really needed to say that, because
people don't say anything in Stockholm. They bump into you all the time. And I don't know if it's just Stockholm or if it's a Swedish thing. It might be Stockholm because it's a city thing. And everybody who bumps into you, they just keep walking. And I've gotten so used to it that I forget when I go back. And it takes me about a week to get back in the swing of things. And I'll accidentally bump somebody and keep walking. And I'll hear them go, oh, sorry, sorry. And then I have to remember. Oh, yeah, sorry, sorry.
I think it's a city thing, because I think once you get outside of the city, in some of the smaller towns, I mean, then, because there's much more space.
Yeah.
So if you
do
actually bump into someone, I mean, it's kind of like, okay,
Yeah.
Where I think in Stockholm, it's, unless it's like a really, like, you're kind of hurt.
Yeah.
Then
right. It's,
because sometimes people can back into you really kind of forcefully.
Or if it's icy, they can actually knock you down. Yeah.
And then you're kind of like, hello, I'm a person.
I think I think as a Canadian, you say thank you and sorry a lot for existing, almost. Whereas I think in Sweden, I was like, why are you thanking me for giving you the receipt? That's just something that we do, but I feel very grateful. Thank you very much for the receipt. I think the second thing that I noticed, and I think this is a bit more Indonesian than Canada, is that I think as an Indonesian, when you say goodbye, you're doing or you're around, say if you're gathering with friends and, you know, there's 10 of them and you're about to say goodbye, it's going to take you 20 minutes to walk out the door because you have to make the rounds with everybody, mm-hmm. and you leave some time to keep talking to people because maybe they'll try to make you stay. Here, I think people just say, hey, do. And you're out the door.
Kind of and a general, mm-hmm. I gotta go, everyone, goodbye.
I feel if like almost say goodbye. It's a bit too if, short.
That's true, if they even say goodbye. Sometimes they just kind of sneak out because they're like...
We've snuck out at big parties before because, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just too much to find the host.
It's but I think I realize that, like, I feel so... Like, that's so rude, like, to just, like, go like that. Even, like, this morning, I was at a doctor, and I feel like as I was saying the goodbye, I was really repeating my goodbye a few times. Because I don't know why, but I feel like it's like, oh.
Okay, so your doctor thinks you're crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just like, okay, bye, yeah, bye. Thank you, yeah, bye. Okay, yeah, bye.
I don't know, was it a psychiatrist? Because they're going to bring this up next time.
I know. It's like
general doctor, thankfully. But
one bye is enough.
Exactly. So I was like, wow, like I think I walked out of the door. I'm like, wow, I really needed to say goodbye a few times before I feel like I can really walk out. And I'm like, that must be a cultural thing.
It probably is. Yeah. So you were saying, like, you can appreciate stuff from, you know, Indonesia and Canada now that you're in Sweden. So what are some things that you've discovered that you appreciate now that you didn't before, like, say, about Indonesia?
I think the Indonesians are really warm and expressive. And yeah. I think even when I went to Canada, you know, people say that, oh, you're so smiley, you know, oh, you're so friendly. And I thought that it's a personality that is special to myself, and perhaps some of it is, but I think a lot of it is cultural. You're brought in this place where you are taking everyone in as a community. You offer someone to drop by your house, and you mean right now, I'm going to go to your house right now. We're going to hang out. And I think those are the kind of cultural warmness that I appreciate of myself, that I think when I moved to Canada, I had a hard time trying to fit in, and I really wanted to be one of them, you know, wanted to be one of the Canadians and be accepted. But I think after a while, you realize that, you know, there's a part of my personality that I love, that I don't want to lose, and that's okay. And that's the part where the Canadian culture is also really warm, and that people are really chatty, really friendly. You talk to people all the time, and that's okay. I'm going to try to bring that here, even if people just look at me weird.
Yeah, but it's a positive thing to bring to another country. And there are people who will really appreciate it, because I hear people talk about over here in Sweden, because they're famous for, like, not being super chatty with people. And sometimes I'll hear them say, the Americans are great because they'll just talk to anybody, but in a good, positive way. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they're usually so friendly. And I think that they appreciate that, even if they aren't comfortable enough doing it back themselves. So it's good to bring in those kind of things. I also have a theory that the warmer countries are usually more talkative and friendly than the colder countries.
Yes.
In my Swedish classes, I noticed that.
As the climate gets warmer, the people get warmer.
Maybe we have hope.
Yeah. I guess that's why in the summer people are friendlier here. It just feels a bit warmer.
I think so. And everybody, that's why the summers
and
are so
sun.
Great. Yeah, everybody's happy, everybody's outdoors and mingling with each other, because we're all outside in the summer because you don't want to waste 1 second inside.
Yeah.
And then in the winter, we're just like, no, I'm sorry, I'm very sleepy. The sun went down at 2:30. I don't want to be out here. I'm going to go home now.
Yeah, that's kind of bringing us back to Christmas, which is December's one of the darkest months.
That's why I am looking forward to all the lights here, because I think that at least people are really aware of how dark it is here, and they make so much effort to decorate the storefront with lights. Again, these are not something that I usually see.
There'll be lots of
in
candles
Canada.
And lots of lights. It's really pretty. And in the windows, you'll see all the stars.
Everybody puts Christmas stars in the windows, and they're beautiful.
Really looking forward to that. I'm trying to decorate my place as well, because it's really dark right now.
And then a lot of the big department stores will have Christmas window displays. So NK will unveil their windows soon.
Yes.
They
have
has
the
some sort of theme.
Yeah, and a story. So you start at one window and you take in the story. So you, for anybody listening, if you go to the NK department store, they're going to start their Christmas windows I want to say mid-November, but at least by the last week of November. And you want to start on the left side.
I actually think it might be this weekend.
So if you go to NK to see the windows, the best thing to do is to start on the far left. That's your first one, and whatever the theme is going to be. And if it's a story, you should start that way, because then the last window is like, yay, it sums up whatever the whole theme
is. It's closest to the
entrance. And I've done it backwards sometimes, just because there's often a crowd of people, and I'm like, I'm not going to walk all the way there. I mean, you can do it however you like, but for the good experience, go all the way to the left.
Okay, I'm going to have to try that.
Start near the hot dog stand.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's a hot dog stand right before. Always get your hot dog, take your time.
Yeah, so it's, I think it's, those are the kind of things that I think makes you look into, you know, what's going on in the city, right? I think I think a lot about what are the kind of experiences that I want to expose myself into to help me better adjust here, because I think that you can also go a long time without trying all of these experiences.
And there's also ice skating at Kungsträdgården Gordon, so the ice skating rink will be out just there in the middle of the park.
If you have your own ice skates, you just walk on up. It's free.
It's free.
But if you need to rent, there's a rental thing too.
Okay.
But you know what you do? You just go to the secondhand store and buy yourself some really cheap ice skates, and then you don't have to rent anything.
Okay. See, that'll again, like lots of things.
Tips and
like,
tricks.
Oh, it's free. I'm like, really? I'm like, okay, we're going to go now.
Christmas markets, ice skating, it's all free. Yeah. Just walk around.
I really, really, really enjoyed seeing a lot of kids on the street here. I mean, this might sound again odd, but you know, I live in Södermalm, where it's in the middle of the city. It's not really the suburbs, but you can see kids everywhere during weekdays, you know, with their teachers or with parents picking them up. You just kind of see kids everywhere in the bus, you know, the older kids or the younger ones in
their
strollers.
They're taking themselves,
I think, again, like maybe this is specific to Canada or Vancouver, like it's not really until you go to the suburbs where you see them. And when even when you do go to the suburb, you don't really see them because everyone has their own houses and kids don't really just all go outside together. Maybe there will be two or three of them, but here,
that's a good point.
You just see them everywhere. They're
well,
like,
I think,
you know, the kids train.
I understand what you're saying, because here, but we are in the middle of the city, so a lot of times you'll see like the daycare, big group of kids, and they're walking them to the park, or like they take them to the theater. Like a lot of the opera and the ballet, a lot of them offer programs free for the kids from the daycares. So a lot of times the 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, they're going to the opera to like try on outfits and do this or do that.
That
like
is the reason why I think it's different, is that even in the Vancouver city, even if you go to the city, you don't really see the kids there, because you stay in the daycare. There's not really, it's not safe for you to bring them out
here
in
the like,
cars.
It's like outdoor.
But with the little ones,
the
it's so cute because they usually have a rope. They all they all have
and
to
they
hold.
Have the little their reflector jackets.
The little reflector vest. It's so cute. Or they have partners, and each one has to hold hands with a partner. Or
that's sort of the kind of things. So I think as an adult, where I see them, I was like, that warms my heart, and I love that I get to see them every day, just kind of in a day to day life.
But you're gonna see more of them now. Because that's the thing too. They bring their skates, so the parents, they'll leave a note saying we're going to take the kids skating, so then they'll bring the skates and their helmets and stuff, and they'll go. You'll see them like all carrying their little things lined up and all excited to go skating. I mean, they learn to ice skate when they're like 3 or 4 years old.
But it does drive me nuts, because I'm just outside of the city. And yeah, they're so cute until they get in the subway car with you and you're like, oh God, they're so loud and they're taking all the seats. And
you're like, darn it. Why do they have to be so cute and loud?
So something we like to ask about on the podcast is if you've made any cultural mistakes since coming here, or language mistakes, anything that you feel embarrassed about, because I think we all do this. And it's just nice to hear that we're not the only people who maybe made a fool of themselves.
Certainly. I mean, I think I talked a little bit about all of my sorrying and my thank-you-ing here, that I feel like it's not until someone really stares at you that I feel like, oh, I must have done something weird here, because someone is really staring at me when I say thank you and sorry.
Yeah.
So that was one where, again, it's very Canadian. I feel like that's something I'm going to have a hard time to correct, because sorry just comes out really easily for me as well as thank you. I think I made the classic mistake of saying glass. I mean the ice cream, but yeah. My uttal was wrong. So I was referring to glass, the material, the glass with the double S as opposed to the one S. But I didn't realize that it was a double meaning if you don't pronounce it correctly. So when I go to the ice cream store, I try to order in Swedish and I say glass and they're like, you mean ice cream, right? I'm like, yes. I'm like, oh,
I didn't think I could even hear the difference between those two.
This is the first time I've ever even heard this one.
I guess I'm still
lost. I think it's a long ah
as opposed to a short ah. So I'm still learning the uttal in SFE. But the we talked about a little bit about obviously incorrect pronunciation.
Yeah.
But sometimes I like this about the Swedes because sometimes I think they just assume that you know what you're doing, so they never just correct you. So when I started speaking in Swedish, I think they just assume, oh yeah, you've been speaking Swedish your entire life, no problem, we're not gonna correct you. But I was like, okay, I guess I didn't understand this. So I had a little bit of that twice now at an ice cream store, so I know I must have said something incorrectly.
So they honestly think you might be ordering a piece of glass rather than ice cream in an ice cream store. I mean,
that's kind of weird. Like, you're walking up to the counter, people. Can I have a glass?
No, your window.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, all right, that's a language thing that I'm going to have to understand a little bit better.
Yes. They're not very forgiving for slight mispronunciations. Yeah,
I think it's going to take a while, but I have to say my experience with SFE has been really good, that I really wanted to highlight it in that I thought the education system here has been so good. The teachers in class have been going beyond language. You know, they try to teach culture as well, like Swedish culture. And we've been going on, what do you call this? I guess field study?
Field trips.
To go to Nobody. Yeah, I think study visits. So I find that I've really learned a lot just even by attending to the class beyond the language. So that's why we talk a little bit about the uttal and the pronunciation and how some words will be harder than the others. And I think part of that is through SFEs.
Yeah.
Knowing
that's
them.
Great to yeah, hear because I had a horrible one. SFE experience, but that was years ago. So it's nice to hear it might be improving.
Or it just depends on the teacher and the class. Because I took so many classes and most of them were a waste of time. And then I, like you, in SFE, finally, the last one I was going to do, I got a great teacher who did the same thing. Yeah. It wasn't just a language class. He would take us once a week on field trips around town and tell us a little history of Stockholm or show us things. What kind of places have you gone with your class?
So I have done SFE for, I think, about 5 or 6 weeks. So the first class that I did was the introduction. So it's not, I guess, it's like a pre-class to the actual C class, which is the introduction, the very basic level. On that one, we went to Vaxholm. My class is only 6 people. So
you took a boat out there?
We took a boat. So the idea is to talk about the nature, to talk about transport, you know, to talk about when we were in Vaxholm, we see a lot of traditional houses that are, I guess, unique to Vaxholm.
Yeah.
And the teacher also explained the color of the house, the distinct red color.
Right.
There's
a story
called,
behind that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, where does the red comes from and why it is significant.
So do you remember?
I believe it's called Rødfering, I want to say, and it's from the copper mine. So that's
in
how
Falun, I think.
Yes, yes. So they got the red tin from a copper mine, but they said that they've actually fully mined the copper mine itself. So any of the red color paint that you see today is likely from old mining, but there's no new mining anymore.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so those are the kind of, to me, like cultural insights, I suppose, that you might not know unless someone teaches to you. My teacher is about 60 years old as well. So we talked about the revolution that Sweden has gone through as a country since about 50 to 60 years ago. Just the universal education around English, you know, how the revolution around the workers, the rights of the workers. And even I learned something really interesting, which is called the knee revolution. So for you who is speaking Swedish, you know, might know that knee generally refers to you all, like you in plural. But what I didn't appreciate it is that in the past, you can also refer to ni as an honorific for a single person. And I think that it takes a full revolution to change the even the use of the language to be more inclusive.
Yeah, because that was more towards older people or like more status-filled people. And it was kind of a class thing.
Exactly.
That they really rebelled against. And now a lot of Swedes will be offended if you use that with them. Like, I'm not trying to start a class thing. You know, I don't think I'm better than you. Don't use ni with me.
And, exactly. So yeah. I didn't realize that. I mean, you know, I'm just learning a language here. Right. And I just thought that ni is just you plural. But right. I think if you had used them in the wrong context, I'm like, yes, there's a little bit of a cultural thing you have to understand here of the significance why they don't use this. So I found that all makes learning a lot easier, I suppose, rather than just memorizing your textbook.
To know the reasons behind things.
Yeah. And then we also went to the National Museum as a class. So we did a 1-hour guided tour in Swedish. The tour guide is from Finland. So she was very encouraging. And she said that I have accent myself. You know, my Swedish has a little bit of an accent, so I'm not fluent. You know, this is just my Swedish. So it was, again, a really encouraging environment. I think we have about 10 people now in the class, really good sized class, and everyone comes from everywhere. But like I said, 80% to 90%, they have a Swedish partner. This is why I'm saying Swedes like to come home at some point, and then they bring other people here.
If I could jump back to the red paint, the thing is like with the getting that from the iron or the copper mines and stuff, they realized that some of the chemicals there, they protected the wood. So that was another reason why they used that red color.
Yeah.
Because then the houses, the wood lasted a lot longer. Ah. So it protected it from the elements.
I see.
So that's another reason.
Yeah.
It was rich in iron, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Those are the kind of things that I feel like making language learning so much more fun. I mean, generally, I think the teacher would speak 80 to 90% in Swedish. So I can't say I understand fully, but I think by continuing to train yourself to keep listening to words in Swedish, you get to pick up a few things. And we even speak about the wood carving in certain cabins. I think it's called the carpenter's joy in English. The really specific, I think you'll know it when you see it, but I think it's called the carpenter's joy. It's this kind of pattern, I guess, that you see in a house.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so many interesting things to me that like makes you feel that you belong a lot more. You're not just here learning language itself, and it makes it a lot
That's
more fun.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think those little small things kind of give you a window into the mentality and the culture and the mindset of the people. So maybe help you understand them a little bit more.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think that otherwise, even a classroom experience can be a bit of a controlled environment, right? Where they are speaking to you a lot more clearly, a lot more slowly. So you might not have the exposure to, what is the normal speed of the Swedes who are talking to you? So this morning I had, again, a really good kind of everyday experience where I went to the apotek to refill my prescription. I tried to speak in Swedish a little bit to just say, you know, I'm here to refill my prescription. I'm new to Swedish. You know, my Swedish is just okay. And the lady on the other side, and she just smiled and it's like, oh, very good. You know, you have to train your Swedish. And she tried to explain to me. I can see her thinking through the words that she's about to say to me. Just to say that, oh yeah, you should train your Swedish a little bit. So she tried to explain it in a simple Swedish, and then she repeated in English again to make sure that I understand.
That's nice.
But those are to me the kind of, I think, everyday kindness that you might receive if you try to be vulnerable. This is why I try to have a line where I say, I'm new to Swedish. I'm learning. Can you speak a bit slowly? And I think people
smart,
are open to that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap up, but before we do you have any tips for anybody, either just coming to Sweden, or have you found a good restaurant or a cool museum or a park or area of town that you think people should check out?
The Visit Sweden website is amazing. I got a lot of my information before coming here there. The paperwork is really important here. So if you are moving here, do the research beforehand. I think I could have done that a bit more because that took me a while to figure out. So paperwork is important. Make sure you look up the process here before you come here. Lots of really good restaurants. I've been really, really happy. For someone who is new here from North America, tipping is not really a thing here.
Right.
So you might have a sticker shock of a price when you look at the restaurant, but
you don't have to tip here.
Be mindful. It's tax plus tips included.
Yeah.
There's lots of great restaurants in Sodomam. I love the Mormor dumpling in Sodomam.
I've heard that one's good.
The grandma dumpling. Mm-hmm. That was really good. That was one of my favorites.
I've heard that that's excellent. So super tips. Wow. Thank you. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.